before the closing speaker this afternoon, this will end today's or this afternoon's presentations, we have Dr. Andy Marino. Andy has a PhD in biophysics and a Doctor of Laws degree. He's now Associate Professor of Orthopedic Surgery at the Louisiana State University School of Medicine in Shreveport. He spent several years as a biophysicist at the Veterans Administration Medical Center in Syracuse, New York. There, he conducted some of the earliest studies on effects of ELF fields on rodents. He's the editor of the Journal of Bioelectricity, and he's also an author of two books on ELF bioeffects issues. Unlike the previous speakers in this afternoon's session, Dr. Marino will not be describing results of a committee review. Rather, he will be discussing his assessment of the evidence on ELF effects as presented in his books and papers. The title of his presentation is Health Risks from Electric Power Facilities.
You've heard the case for the defense. I'm the prosecutor for the meeting. The report that's in the syllabus that was handed out is about as prosecutor-like that I'd actually like to be. And for my presentation, what I've done is prepare a talk based on the following change of stripes. Envision that I am knowledgeable, that I know about this subject, and that I have a long history of working for the power industry, that I'm sensitive to its problems, that I'm generally concerned about where it goes from here, and that it continue to do what it does best, provide power, and that I want to have zero truck with anybody who would interfere with that. It's from this perspective that I prepared these slides. I envisioned that I was approached by executives of the industry and asked for my view. What exactly are the claims being made against this industry? Are they true? Do they have any merit? And what problems do they create besides the obvious ones that we can see? And how would, if it was up to me, how would we go about fixing everything? The basic claim that's made is that living near power lines helps to make people sick. The claim usually doesn't involve an assertion of causality, as scientists or even lawyers know that term. A general, vague association that you're not going to do as well, you're not going to be as healthy if you live near a power line. That's the basic claim. Nobody's claimed that these fields make cells and test tubes do funny things. No one's claimed that they make rats go back and forth in a shuttle box. The claim is, makes people sick. What does it make them have? The claim is everything. Cancer, you know, cancer is a complex disease. 206 kinds of cancers. There are articles in the literature associating field exposure with a significant number of them. But not just cancer. Suicide, blood disorders, infertility problems, virtually anything for which there exists a database, a mortality or morbidity database. The data's there. Some guy, usually someone with the right degrees, went and tapped that database, drew an association with occupational and environmental exposure, and said, hey, possible link. Broad-based claims. How is it all supposed to work? The only credible claim that I can find in the literature is stress. The claim is that when you're exposed to fields on a chronic basis, it taxes your ability to deal with the myriad other problems, the myriad other factors in your environment, hence predisposes you, or to use the language we've heard today, promotes a disease. Those are the claims. The $64 question. You can look at it two ways, I think. You can look at it at a scientific level. There, the answer is, it depends. If you define for me the judge, I'll tell you what the answer is. If we appoint an ABC committee, a CBS, an NBC, once we establish the composition of the committee, we've established the answer. That's the fact of the matter today. In the real world, I don't think it matters whether the claims are valid or not. I really don't think today it matters, because the people who are making them are honest. They're not lowlifes. They're not people who learn their science by reading the back of a box of cereal. These are competent people who are honest in what they believe. They honestly believe that they're right, and they have evidence. In our society, we've got strange mechanisms, depending on the arena, for adjudicating quantum or amount of evidence. But you invoke these mechanisms once you reach a threshold of amount. Can't put my finger on how much it is, but that it exists. And there's enough now for a problem to go on a chronic basis. And these folks, they just keep coming. What problems does it create? It creates a lot of problems. This is one of them. The trend of the evidence is against us. It's against this industry. Despite all the money we've invested through DOE and EPRI and New York and all the other industry-supported programs, when we're all said and done, you look at all the evidence, the situation is worse off than it was prior. We have more effects, more complexity, more controversy, more evidence tending to indicate that there is a problem. And while the industry was doing this, there were some folks out there who originally pointed to the problem and who have secured funding and work in other areas who are generating additional evidence, commonly not considered by the ABC and the CBS and the NBC committees, but they are there. And they have credibility and standing in mainstream science, that is, science outside this orbit. The evidence is going against the industry in quantum and in quality. This is important. Within the next 5 years, I think, there are going to be some definitive experiments that are going to be done, likely to be done. And in these experiments, in laboratory experiments involving humans and involving animals, we're going to be able to detect the actual detection process itself in people. You put somebody in an electromagnetic environment and detect or measure the individual's response to it, even localize it in the area of the brain, forever forswearing the issue of whether the body is reacting. That's an important legal threshold to have crossed. It's an important scientific threshold to have crossed. This is a mouse with a tumor implanted on its back in the neck area. Using this kind of an animal model, we're going to be able to explore the risk-promoting characteristics of external electromagnetic fields. The scientists are going to have that capability. They're going to be able to compare different intensities, different fields, different frequencies for degree of cancer promotion in animals. So those of you who need numbers from animals in terms of relating risk to cancer, likely to come. Not definite going to come, likely to come. Seems to me the industry has got to prepare for this eventuality down the road only a few years. If it doesn't happen, that's fine. But it's likely to happen if you look at what's going on now. Here's another problem. Outside the industry, in the medical arena, there has been an explosion of interest in the use of electromagnetic energy for understanding basic human physiology and for treating diseases. Now, it is grossly inconsistent for the industry to maintain a posture of feeling that and asserting that there are no consequences, health consequences, when the energy deposited in subjects living beside power lines actually is less than the energy being used in clinical studies for treating disease. There's a gross inconsistency, which worsens each month because the tentacles of the therapeutic use of energy are increasing, not decreasing. It's a sexy thing in clinical research today. If you're willing to go into the clinic and use electrical energy, you'll have colleagues knocking at your door. This is my favorite for potential problems. There are 650,000 lawyers in the United States. Any one of them can bring a suit in tort alleging damage, alleging injuries as a result of living beside power lines. There are sufficient legal theories, standard cubbyholes, where these allegations can fit in. My personal favorite for likely to succeed is product liability. Not a problem for this industry today. It wasn't a problem for the medical industry in the 60s, even in the early 70s either. But in the United States, we have a very volatile legal system. Legal theories come into vogue overnight, and they explode onto the scene and have pervasive effects on the way an industry functions. 15 years ago, there was no such legal theory as informed consent, no such legal theory as wrongful life. Now these are crushing problems for physicians. The same thing has the potential for occurring here, suits brought by people who are exposed, occupationally or environmentally. And look at the factors that cut against the industry if such suits occur. The status of parties. Imagine the industry in court. Big power company, little landowner. That doesn't look good to a judge and a jury. The involuntary aspect. That also does not look good to an independent third-party judge. An individual who didn't know that there was such a thing as an electromagnetic field in his living room. Yeah, maybe under the wires, Your Honor, but I didn't know it was in the living room. That's the sort of thing that's predictably going to happen, the kind of problem that's going to be presented. And of course, the association isn't for something innocuous. Gee, Your Honor, I want money because my toenails got longer. That's not the argument. My wife got cancer, Your Honor. This volatile, emotionally charged consequence. Here's another problem. In New York, in this interminable hearing we've heard about, the industry played the Rochester Gambit. There are no health risks because there are no effects. You can't have an effect, a risk if there's no effect. Well, you've heard every speaker today disavow that position. That's wonderful. Except that when this industry's representatives go into the courts of this country, that's exactly the position they take. That's inconsistent, that looks bad, that's a millstone around this industry's neck. It doesn't have a coherent, consistent position. It says different things to different people under different circumstances. That's not the way we want it to stay. What should we do? I think we ought to establish some sort of a national organization, a clearinghouse run by generalists, not by scientists. This is not a scientific problem at all. A scientific question involves, does a rat spend more time on one side of a box than the other? Does a cell's firing rate change when you apply a field? That's got nothing to do with what interests you. Are people made sick by being exposed to the line? There's an unfathomable gap between the two. Generalists ought to run it. They ought to formulate a coherent, consistent position for this industry. Rather than hiding from people who disagree with the industry, they ought to go out and find them. Bring them in, sit them down, and ask them, why do you think what you think? If a guy makes no sense, if he's inconsistent or incoherent, well, then he's dismissible. But if his argument is rational, if his evidence is good, if it hangs together, then it's got to be factored into a position which is the same, more or less, depending on different parts of the country, the position of the industry. You've got to listen to the people who disagree with this, not oppose. We've got to stop purposely or negligently confusing ourselves. We say, that's an effect is not necessarily a hazard. Yes, it is. You show me a lawyer for an industry, power company, that's willing to go into court and say, Your Honor, sure, this line makes effects, but there are no hazards. There are physiological effects, Your Honor, but there are no hazards. You show me a lawyer who takes that position, I'll show you a fool. The position ought to be staked out. It ought to have borders which respond to the evidence. We're not here to try to build a false case. Once we do that, we go a fool's hill. We want to be truthful, every one of us. We don't want to give away the family jewels. We also want to deceive one another. This position can be staked out by the generalists who ask the general questions, not by the scientists who ask unimportant questions generally. The edge of the position can be a function of time. It can move back and forth depending on the evidence and as it comes in. The evidence is clear, I think, that the research has gotten us zilch, nothing. X millions of dollars for 10 years, and we know nothing more because of it than when we started. But we've got problems that went along with it. Controversy, confusion, doubt. It's been counterproductive. Perhaps we should do no research at all. We certainly should do no research unless we have specific questions. This industry has no business spending money finding out what rats do on either side of a plastic box. If it turns out that's relevant to health effects, well, that's one thing. But there's no such argument, no such assertion that it matters. Ditto for cells and test tubes. I think the industry ought to reassess its role and relationship to government. Sometimes being on the quote side, under this quote, of government is good, sometimes it's bad. Keep in mind that this industry delivers a product, delivers a service. It does it probably as well as any industry, any place doing anything. Its track record in terms of doing what it does is a whole lot better than most federal regulatory agencies. Federal regulatory agencies don't give products and services, and they function under a different legal environment. The DOD, for example, the big player in this game, has got the Fearies Doctrine. It doesn't have to worry about getting sued. The industry does. The rules are entirely different. Seems to me there needs to be a real strong appraisal of the relationship and perhaps an independent course charted. In summary, the claims are that the fields make people sick. The assertion is that it involves stress. Whether it's true or not at a scientific plane really depends on who you ask the question. If there's any suspicion in your mind that scientists generally believe what you've heard the ABC commissions believe, I think that's untrue. It creates many problems for the industry. The chief one, I think, is yet to be appreciated, which is the potential legal impact. What's not been appreciated, I think, is the fluidity or the volatile nature with which the problem can develop. And I think the future hinges on an honest reappraisal by this industry, as an industry, of its position, a definition of its position, and a reappraisal of the research effort is taken thus far. I thank you very much for listening.
Well, I'd like to be the first to agree with Dr. Marino. I think that on the basis that he's presented, the case for the prosecution is a very interesting one. It has absolutely nothing to do with the science issues, but it's a very interesting one. So I'd like to be the first to agree that there are problems, that they stem in large part from the kind of basis that Dr. Marino presented, that is, the vague claims, uncertainties, fears, those kinds of issues, emotional issues. There is a great deal of danger, and the industry does stand. It would be foolish not to take those seriously. They've been tried in a number of courts. The emotional basis for the approach that Dr. Marino has done very admirably here has been tried in court. It has occasionally prevailed, even. I know there are only a couple of attorneys in the country that I know who specialize in this area apart from Dr. Moreno. One is Carlos Alvarez in Florida, and one is Tom Watson with Kroll and Morgan in D.C. It's complicated issues. I don't believe they approach the topic in this way, but it'll be interesting. I'd be interested to hear the legal session and see how that's approached. My concern is a little bit different, though. There is this potential FAR concern. There is this danger. We all know about it in the industry. But my concern is quite different, and that is, when a scientific commission gets together and does, in fact, deal with the science and make those findings available to state agencies and regulators, will the decisions be made about regulation on the basis or about fault to the industry, for that matter, in court cases? Will the decisions be made on the basis of the scientific evidence, or will they be made on the basis of emotion and of the case for the prosecution that Dr. Moreno has presented? And I leave that question hanging in the air.
HB, I think you stated a contorted expression of the situation. What you really analyzed in Florida and for ARBS was a political question, not a scientific question. The scientific question was, did the field accelerate or decelerate fracture healing? Was there a statistical association between suicide and living near a magnetic field? That's the scientific question. And those articles are in the literature with the same degree of scientific precision as anything that's ever come out of Penn State. That's the scientific question. What you considered, HB, was the political question, the judgmental question of how much of a risk versus what it would cost society to deal with it. You went way beyond science. So don't maintain that, in fact, you didn't.
Well, that's a nice introduction to what I've decided will be my five-minute presentation this evening. Because if you want to talk science, that's fine. I disagree with you, obviously. But what I'd like to do is to simply present some scientific evidence about the major specter on the horizon that you raised, and that is stress. Let's look at the science. That's my plea, not to you, but not really to this audience, but to regulators and to juries, for that matter, to the people at large. And I'll leave it at that and continue with my presentation this evening.
Clay? Easterly from Oak Ridge National Laboratory. I want to commend you, Dr. Moreno, on the strategy to bring forth your point. Many people in here may know that I have long been an advocate of a very different research approach. What would you recommend? You say stop the research.
The first thing I do would be to define exactly what the goal was. If the goal is simply to go in the laboratory and show that under certain conditions animals respond, I'd say you're wasting your money. That's been done innumerable times. It leads nowhere. The first thing that's got to be done is a goal has got to be established. What exactly do you want from the scientists? What do you need in order to do business, in order not to be hassled, in order to be able to truthfully tell the housewife that the fields will not increase your risk of disease? What do you need? And design an appropriate research program. I can guarantee you it wouldn't start with cells and test tubes. It'd start at the other end. It'd start where the real biology is.
Do we have time for an additional comment? Question?